I want you to think about the last time you interacted with a pharmacist.
Right.
And I mean really interacted.
Mm-hmm.
Because for anyone who actively follows healthcare trends, you already know we are light years away from the era of a person just standing behind a counter counting pills and handing over a paper bag.
Yeah, those days are long gone.
Exactly. Today, you are looking at a crucial, life-saving clinical expert, someone who is actively managing highly complex therapies. But how did we actually get here?
It's a massive shift.
It really is. And our mission for this deep dive is to trace the incredible 37-year evolution of pharmaceutical care. We are going to explore how this profession developed from, basic first principles into the modern, highly integrated system we rely on today.
And we have some fantastic source material to guide us.
We do. We're drawing from a brilliantly structured lecture presentation by University Professor Dr. Anita Weidman. She is the head of the Clinical Pharmacy Department at the University of Innsbruck.
With 24 years of frontline experience.
Right. As an educator, a researcher, and a clinical pharmacist.
It is a remarkable trajectory to analyze, honestly, because to truly appreciate the highly integrated care model we have now, you have to look at the baseline. Prior to the late 1980s, the pharmacist was essentially viewed by the broader medical establishment as a highly educated healthcare product salesman.
A product dispenser.
Exactly. The entire focus was on the transaction and the chemistry of the product itself, not necessarily the clinical outcome for the human being taking it. Professor Weidman uses this brilliant visual analogy of the 1977 Voyager 1 spacecraft.
Oh, I loved that part.
Right. You can look at the development of modern pharmaceutical care as a massive, multi-decade journey of discovery. Just like Voyager 1 leaving our solar system, the profession had to venture into completely uncharted clinical territory over the last 37 years. They were fundamentally rewriting their own gravitational rules.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to go from a product dispenser to a recognized clinical expert, there had to be a distinct turning point. You don't just wake up one morning and change the entire global healthcare
Or
hierarchy.
definitely do not.
The pivotal moment arrived in 1989 and 1990, courtesy of a foundational paper published by two researchers named Hepler and Strand. They essentially drew a line in the sand.
It really did.
This was the very first paper to offer eight specific drug-related problem categories, which finally gave the profession a diagnostic framework.
That paper cannot be overstated in its importance. I mean, Hepler and Strand established a completely new philosophy. Before their work, the focus of pharmacy was heavily skewed toward biological systems and the products. The compounding, the pharmacokinetics, making sure the correct drug was in the correct bottle.
The physical stuff.
Exactly. But their landmark paper redefined the profession. They stated that pharmaceutical care is the responsible provision of drug therapy for the explicit purpose of achieving definite outcomes that improve a patient's quality of life.
And they didn't leave it vague either.
No, they explicitly defined those outcomes. Curing a disease, eliminating or alleviating symptoms, halting or slowing a disease process, or preventing a disease altogether.
Which fundamentally shifted the liability and the focus from the molecule to the human being. It reminds me of that concept from the movie Awakenings, which the lecture brings up as a metaphor.
Yes, the Awakenings metaphor is so powerful here.
Right. Lab-based scientists can work tirelessly to understand drug mechanisms at the microscopic level. They can find the absolute perfect molecule. But if that perfect drug fails in the real world because of how it is prescribed, how it is monitored, or how a real flawed human patient uses it.
Whose responsibility is that gap?
Exactly. For a long time, the medical system didn't have a clear answer to that.
What's fascinating here is how the medical community finally began to rigorously quantify that exact gap. It wasn't just a philosophical debate anymore, it became a statistical nightmare.
The 1995 data.
Yes. In 1995, the Journal of the American Medical Association published a massive, undeniable study on the systems analysis of adverse drug events.
And this wasn't just a small sample size.
Not at all. Researchers rigorously tracked 11 different medical and surgical units over a 6-month period, and they discovered that 28% of all adverse drug reactions were entirely preventable.
28%. When you scale that across every hospital in a country, you are looking at a catastrophic amount of unnecessary human suffering.
It's staggering.
And the breakdown of where those errors originated is what really shifted the spotlight. The study showed that 29% of those preventable adverse events stemmed directly from physician errors. Another 18% were due to inadequate patient information.
Meaning the patient simply didn't know how to take the medication safely.
Right. and the rest were just massive cascading system failures.
That data provided the first rigorous, undeniable quantification of where a pharmacist's impact could be utilized. It proved that if you want to stop patients from being harmed by the very treatments meant to save them, you need pharmacist interventions exactly where the system was failing.
At the ordering and administration stages.
Exactly. It was the empirical proof that checking the product wasn't enough. Someone had to check the clinical logic behind the order.
But having the empirical proof is only half the battle in medicine. I mean, you can show a hospital administrator a spreadsheet proving the system is broken, but changing the behavior of the people inside that system is a different beast entirely.
Human nature is stubborn.
It really is. Moving into the late 90s, we hit the 1999 Cabana framework. This framework has a vital question that still plagues healthcare today. Why don't physicians follow clinical practice guidelines?
Such an important question.
The framework identified four distinct barriers: awareness, agreement, adoption, and overcoming inertia.
Those four barriers are the friction points of all medical advancement. It is not enough for a doctor to just be aware of a new guideline suggesting pharmacists should manage drug therapies. They have to actually agree with it.
Which is often a massive professional hurdle.
Oh, absolutely. They might feel it infringes on their clinical autonomy. And even if you secure their agreement, you face the adoption and inertia barriers. Rewriting the workflow of a clinic that has been operating the exact same way for 20 years requires immense administrative effort.
So the Cabana framework essentially highlighted that just proving pharmaceutical care works isn't enough.
Right. The profession had to systematically dismantle human nature and institutional resistance to get it implemented.
And unfortunately, the thing that usually breaks through that kind of deep-seated institutional inertia is a crisis. In the year 2000, the Institute of Medicine released a bombshell report titled, "To Err is Human."
That report changed everything.
The findings were horrifying and completely shattered the illusion of the infallible hospital system. The report revealed that between 44,000 and 98,000 preventable deaths were occurring every single year in U.S. hospitals.
And medication errors were identified as a primary contributor to that staggering death toll.
Yes. And the financial hemorrhage was estimated at $17 to $29 billion annually.
It was an absolute paradigm-shifting moment. That report officially positioned pharmacists not as ancillary support staff, but as indispensable patient safety champions.
The urgency was finally there.
Exactly. The sheer scale of the preventable deaths created a profound urgency for structural intervention. More importantly, from a developmental standpoint, it opened the floodgates for research funding into pharmacy practice. Institutions realized they could no longer afford to ignore the medication use process.
Which leads directly into the economic reality of this situation. In 2001, researchers Ernst & Grivel published a comprehensive cost of illness model that put an even more terrifying price tag on this problem.
I remember this data.
They looked beyond just the hospital walls and calculated the total annual cost of drug-related problems in the U.S. The final number was $177.4 billion.
Billion, with a B?
With a B. To put the magnitude of that number in perspective, $177.4 billion was more than the total cost of diabetes care at the time. We were spending more money fixing the damage caused by medications than we were treating one of the most prevalent chronic diseases on the planet.
This raises an important question, one I'd like you, the listener, to carefully consider. When you look at the mechanics of healthcare reform, what actually moves the needle for administrators and policymakers? Is it the ethical imperative of saving tens of thousands of lives? Or is it the financial imperative of stopping a $177 billion leak?
It's a dark thought.
It is a stark reality that it often takes the threat of massive economic collapse to drive the implementation of life-saving systemic healthcare reform.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because the profession didn't just sit on those terrifying statistics. Between 2000 and 2010, clinical pharmacy moved aggressively from theoretical frameworks and terrifying cost models to producing undeniable ground-level proof.
They started tackling this crisis disease by disease.
Right. Setting up rigorous trials to show exactly what a highly trained pharmacist could achieve when fully integrated into patient care.
The clinical trials designed during this era are the foundational bedrock of modern practice. The Asheville Project in 2003 is a prime example.
I love the Asheville Project.
It was a longitudinal study focusing on diabetes management across 12 community pharmacies. They essentially handed the reins of disease management over to the pharmacists,
allowing them to set goals, monitor blood glucose rigorously, and actively counsel the patients.
Yes. And the clinical improvements in the patient's HbA1c blood sugar levels were phenomenal.
What blows my mind about the Asheville project is that the pharmacist's clinical management was outperforming the efficacy of some actual drugs in clinical trials. It proved that the pill itself is only a fraction of the solution. The protocol and the management are what actually dictate success.
And the economic return on that management was massive.
Huge. By bringing those HbA1c levels under control, it saved $1,200 per patient annually in direct medical costs. But even better, because these patients were actually healthier, they took fewer sick days.
Which researchers quantified into an $18,000 per year savings in productivity costs per patient?
That is the definition of value-based care. And the profession rapidly replicated that success across other chronic conditions.
Like the STRIP study in 2002, which targeted cardiovascular health. Across 54 pharmacies, pharmacists were integrated into a collaborative model with physicians and patients. They actively monitored and adjusted lipid-lowering therapies.
And the outcome?
Vastly improved blood cholesterol control and a significant reduction in major cardiovascular events. It proved that community pharmacists are the most accessible, vital piece of the collaborative healthcare puzzle.
But the data also show that you can't just copy and paste a healthcare service and expect identical results everywhere, right?
Correct. Context matters.
The 2008 Victel and Blix synthesis looked at multiple studies across different regions. It overwhelmingly confirmed the positive clinical and economic outcomes of pharmaceutical care, but it also revealed a significant amount of heterogeneity. The interventions didn't work perfectly in every single clinic or community pharmacy.
And that heterogeneity is crucial for anyone studying healthcare systems to understand. Understanding the variation, the context of why a specific intervention thrives in one health system but struggles in another, is often more valuable than just knowing the average positive effect.
It forces researchers to look at the local workflows, the specific patient demographics.
Exactly. And the existing relationship dynamics between local doctors and pharmacists. Yeah. But when the context is optimized and the implementation is done right, the impact is undeniable.
Like the Spanish program.
Yes, the CONSIG program. It was a high-quality, rigorously designed trial implementing medication review with follow-up in community pharmacies. They proved that for every single euro invested in these pharmaceutical care services, the health system saved 12 euros.
A 12-to-1 return on investment.
While simultaneously improving patient health.
So by 2010, the evidence is overwhelming. Pharmacists unequivocally save lives, and they save money. But the profession ran into a logistical wall. To compare all these incredible international studies, to synthesize the data from the Asheville project in the U.S. with the CONSIG program in Spain, they realized they lacked a standardized global language.
How do you accurately compare medication errors if researchers in different countries categorize those errors using different definitions?
You can't. Without standardization, you just have a collection of isolated successes.
This realization led to the vital adoption and continuous evolution of the PCNE, the Pharmaceutical Care Network Europe classification. It functions essentially as the Rosetta Stone for clinical pharmacy.
Starting with version 1 back in 1999.
And it has been relentlessly updated, reaching version 9.1 by 2026. This classification system provides a highly specific, universally agreed-upon coding system for drug-related problems, the causes of those problems, the planned interventions, and the outcomes.
It was the necessary methodological bedrock that allowed the science of pharmaceutical care to truly scale globally.
And right alongside that push for systemic standardization came a profound shift in behavioral theory, which is critical to how your pharmacist interacts with you today. In 2003, a landmark World Health Organization report underpinned a major change in medical terminology.
This is such a cool detail. The field officially began shifting away from using the word compliance and adopted the word adherence.
It sounds like pure semantics, but the WHO report highlighted why it is actually a massive philosophical restructuring of the patient-provider relationship.
How so?
Well, compliance implies a highly paternalistic, dictatorial relationship. The doctor issues a command, and the patient complies. If the treatment fails because the patient didn't take the drug, they are labeled non-compliant, placing the blame entirely on them.
Right, it's very top-down.
Exactly. Adherence, however, is fundamentally collaborative. It recognizes that the patient is an autonomous, active partner in their own healthcare. It acknowledges that a patient might not take a medication because of side effects, cost, or a lack of understanding.
And it is the healthcare professional's job to navigate those barriers with them.
Exactly.
And navigating those barriers is the only way to tackle the modern healthcare crisis. The WHO report laid out the terrifying stakes regarding chronic disease. Poor adherence is one of the heaviest impacts on the global chronic disease burden.
The projections are stark.
By 2025, an estimated 74% of all deaths globally will be attributable to chronic diseases. We are looking at a world where up to 3 adults globally live with multiple chronic diseases simultaneously.
In the USA alone, that number is 60%.
Which means if patients are not actively engaged in adhering to their complex treatment regimens, the most advanced biological drugs on the planet are completely useless.
Which is exactly why the regulatory leashes have been taken off the pharmacy profession over the last decade. If we look at the data leading up to 2026, comparing the progress made since 2020, the scaling of pharmaceutical care, particularly across Europe, is breathtaking.
Based on comprehensive studies by researchers like Hughes and Martins, looking at 33 European countries.
Right. There was a 79% increase in the provision of advanced pharmacy services. Pharmacists are now routinely handling adult vaccinations, managing complex drug waste protocols, and performing comprehensive medicines reconciliation post-hospital discharge.
And the health systems are finally paying for it. Reimbursement for these clinical services increased by 55% across those countries. Even more incredibly, depending on the specific regulatory frameworks of the region, pharmacists now have independent or collaborative prescribing authority in anywhere from 10 to over 35 countries.
They aren't just double-checking the physician's math anymore. They are actively driving the therapy, adjusting doses, and initiating treatments.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we have to look at the unprecedented existential challenges facing the profession in 2026 and beyond.
Because the role of the clinical pharmacist is expanding at the exact moment, the global environment is becoming increasingly unstable.
Climate change is no longer a theoretical future threat to healthcare. It is an active, daily disruption.
We are seeing the physical destruction of healthcare facilities from extreme weather and severe, unpredictable disruptions to the global medical supply chains.
The environment is directly dictating the clinical reality. The climate events are changing the actual disease patterns pharmacists have to treat. Massive, prolonged wildfires are causing unprecedented surges in respiratory health crises, requiring entirely new protocols for asthma and COPD management.
And severe flooding is destroying sanitation infrastructure, leading to rapid increases in waterborne diseases in areas that haven't seen them in decades.
The lecture highlights an incredibly stark example of this new reality in France.
Yes. During the extreme heat waves in France, where temperatures exceeded 46 degrees Celsius, the government required the mandatory registration of vulnerable individuals.
46 degrees? That's unbelievable.
It is. And the healthcare system, heavily relying on community pharmacists, had to proactively track and manage populations that were disproportionately affected by the extreme heat. Many medications affect thermoregulation or require strict temperature control to remain viable.
Pharmacists found themselves on a completely new front line, managing the intersection of pharmacology and climate survival.
And the profession is actively evolving to mitigate its own impact on that climate through initiatives like green pharmacy technology.
Which is a massive push to tackle the contamination caused by medication waste, waste that is actively leaching into and disrupting water supplies globally.
Furthermore, as pharmacies become more technologically advanced, relying heavily on robotics and dispensing machines, the profession has to manage a growing crisis of e-waste.
It is a holistic realization that improving a patient's quality of life inherently requires protecting the physical environment they live in.
And we cannot discuss the technological advancement of the pharmacy without addressing the integration of artificial intelligence.
Yes. AI.
AI and machine learning algorithms are becoming deeply embedded into both clinical pharmacy practice and pharmacological research. They can process vast, complex sets of patient data in seconds, flagging obscure potential drug interactions or utilizing predictive analytics to optimize individualized dosages.
But the guidance from the profession is incredibly clear regarding the golden rule of AI implementation.
AI is designed to augment, not replace, the personalized touch of the human pharmacist.
Because an algorithm cannot look a patient in the eye and understand why they are terrified of taking a new medication. The empathy, the nuanced, collaborative adherence discussions that actually convince a patient to trust the therapy that requires a human being.
The AI is simply a powerful tool used to manage the overwhelming exponential complexity of modern pharmacology, which frees up the pharmacist's time to actually focus on the human being sitting in front of them.
Exactly. So what does this all mean when we synthesize this entire 37-year journey?
The grand takeaways distilled from Professor Dr. Weidman's lecture are profound. First and foremost, research itself does not change practice. Policy does.
Such an important distinction.
You can have decades of rigorous clinical trials proving that a pharmacist's intervention saves lives and billions of dollars, but until policymakers and health administrators implement structural regulatory changes, the system remains static.
However, it is that very mountain of evidence that ultimately forces those policy changes and transforms the profession. We saw that exact mechanism with the To Err is Human report.
Furthermore, standardization is the catalyst for global science. Without frameworks like the PCNE classification, shared global advancement is impossible.
And finally, an interdisciplinary perspective is absolutely essential for survival. Pharmacists, physicians, environmental scientists, policymakers, and AI developers must work in tandem.
The evidence base is never truly complete, and solving the healthcare crises of the future requires methodological rigor that transcends any single discipline.
So, to bring it all home for you, the listener, the modern, highly integrated pharmacy experience you have today is not a happy accident.
Mm-hmm.
It is the result of decades of relentless methodological rigor. It is built on massive, meticulous data collection, fierce advocacy for your safety over institutional inertia, and a fundamental, hard-fought philosophical shift toward prioritizing your holistic well-being over simple product sales.
To wrap up, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over, looking even further ahead than the challenges of 2026.
Okay, let's hear it.
Imagine it is the year 2060. We've seen how drastically the profession evolved from the product-focused 1970s to the integrated, climate-aware AI augmented reality of today. But if AI algorithms eventually perfect the prediction of drug interactions, and automated drone delivery or in-home 3D pill printing handles the physical dispensing of the product.
Does the physical pharmacy building even need to exist in 2060?
Exactly. Or does the pharmacist completely transcend the physical space, becoming a purely digital clinical health coach, perfectly managing your therapies without ever handing you a physical object? Is it time for a completely new definition of pharmaceutical care?
That is a wild and fascinating concept to sit with. The absolute separation of the clinical mind from the physical product. Next time you consult with your pharmacist, remember the decades of science, the intense policy battles, and the profound human dedication that went into building that interaction. Keep questioning the systems around you and keep exploring.